exclusive content, insightful analysis. Join the conservatives at RightWisconsin.com.
And joining me live in studio is the web editor of RightWisconsin.com, Kevin Bedversi. Just wanted to make sure you're paying attention there. And the president of Edge Messaging, the former managing editor of RightWisconsin.com, Brian Fraley. So let's just start off with this. What would it do to America if, in fact, we had taco trucks on every corner? Is that necessarily a bad thing?
I think that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, this is the Trump surrogate who says if Donald Trump's not elected, we will end up with taco trucks on every single corner.
Didn't I once read a column how, like, taco stimulus or something like that back when you ran the site?
I think it would be excellent.
I mean, when you think about it, that, you know, someone's actually done an analysis of how many corners there are in America, and that if there was a taco truck on every single corner, this would create 9.6 million jobs, not to mention the economic development that would be created by the flow of goods and services and the obviously development of more eco-friendly taco trucks.
So now we have to build walls around taco trucks, I guess? Yeah. Is that the next plank?
Well, what was interesting was that he thought this was an effective line when he said, you know, that, well, you know, if we don't do this, we'll have taco trucks in every block. And I think they did an instant poll afterwards, and 86% of the viewers actually found themselves, you know, kind of hungry at the moment. Just thinking about it, you know?
Newsflash, Trump's surrogate not adequately prepped for interview.
Okay, so let's talk about the Marquette poll. Clinton was once up by 15. Now she is up by only 3. What is going on, Brian Fraley?
I think we have a tendency to say, okay, if a poll shows something we like, we love it. If it shows something we don't like, we bash the poll. But I look at polls as a series of snapshots. I think that we might look at this as an outlier, a bit of an outlier. I think the sample might be a little bit too Republican. Mm-hmm. However, let's look. What has Hillary done since the convention? Nothing. She's kind of in this stay at home, stay out of the limelight mode. And so she's lost her complete bump. We are now at this poll where we were before both conventions.
Yeah, I was at the poll unveiling, and Dr. Franklin used this. It's essentially kind of we're back to July. The conventions are over. The bump is over. So, and literally Hillary is kind of at that same kind of point in number of people with her favorabilities, her trustworthiness. Herself.
Okay, so what happened?
The email scandal is eroding.
Okay, let's assume for a moment that we're not talking about changes in methodology in the pollsters or the samples. You know, but the email scandal has been around from the get-go. Why would there be a double-digit swing in 1 month?
Well, I think something that is impacting it is the fact that the additional 15,000, that it's still there. I get the ongoing Clinton, for 20 years, they've done the drip, drip, drip strategy so that at some point you can say, this is old news. Mm-hmm. So it's counter to what we do in crisis management where we tell people to get it all out.
Yeah. Yeah.
They drip, drip, drip it out. But when the drip, drip, drip comes out, and it's like, oh, 15,000 new emails, including emails about 30 emails about Benghazi. Oh, it's going to take us a month to go through 30 emails. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah.
Also a reminder that she is just a craptastic candidate.
The American people are left with two of the most craptastic candidates for major parties in history.
And this poll actually has a number reflecting this, saying that roughly 20% have no preference between the two. That is a remarkable number this close to the election,
isn't
it?
This is one of these scenarios where you do kind of think to yourself, if you had a third option, none of the above, when you actually entered that ballot box, how would it do?
If those were your only three options, none of the above would win a majority of the electoral votes.
I think it would, because both of these are complete, not just craptastic candidates, they're just horrible human beings to begin with. And I mean, this is.
But one of them is going to be elected president of the United States on November 8th.
Be there at minimum 4 to 8, potentially 8 years.
So what is the dynamic of this election? Is it going to be who is the least repellent candidate? I mean, if you're coming up with the strategy of each one.
That's the total strategy from as soon as Trump finished up the nomination, to essentially make the referendum about him, not her, or Obama, and his horrific 8 years in office.
Yeah, what I've been saying for about 8 months now is my fear is that something happens between now and middle of October from a national security, homeland security standpoint. And then people just say, okay, what we're doing isn't working. I'm voting for Trump.
Well, it isn't. It isn't working, obviously. But you're a strategist, Brian. You've run campaigns before. Can you explain to me, because we were talking about this off the air, what Hillary Clinton is doing right now? Because we just saw on one of the cable stations it says, you know, Hillary Clinton lying low while having Joe Biden and Tim Kaine going out and campaigning. You know, where is she? What is she doing? Is she gone into a prevent defense?
Yeah, I think it is playing out the clock. I think part of the strategy was, like, let Trump implode. I think it's a bad strategy to hide your candidate. There's ways to be visible without exposing stuff. The longer she goes without having a press conference, that becomes a narrative. I mean, both candidates are being poorly served, but in part because both candidates are such poor people and candidates.
But you know what really struck me this week, and this seems like an old story, the extent to which Donald Trump is just dominating the news cycles, for better or for worse. Mm-hmm. All anyone is talking about in this campaign is what Donald Trump did, what he did with Mexico, what he's doing on...
And his calculation is that'll be enough to win.
Well, because Hillary Clinton gave a speech the other day in front of the American Legion, and I don't know that anybody paid any attention to it whatsoever. I think people thought that after the convention, well, that you'd have to have at least, you know, equal coverage between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, but it doesn't seem to be happening.
Well, and then there's the calculation that nobody pays attention in August.
Is that true?
So I think it's less true now than it used to be. I mean, with early voting, I mean, people are going to start voting in a couple weeks here.
Okay, let's talk about the U.S. Senate race now within the margin of error. Going back to this shift, is Ron Johnson really closing the gap, or is this again statistical noise?
I think there is closing of the gap. I can understand the statistical noise argument, but I mean just the way this race has been kind of completely overshadowed by the presidential race. I think now we're about to see 2 months of just complete and utter just brawling between these two guys. That's my feel of it.
The gap is narrowing, but it's not because of anything the Johnson campaign is doing. I mean, let's look at July, 41% for Ron Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Early August, 43%. This poll, 42%.
Okay.
Feingold's running a terrible campaign. If Feingold was running a campaign that he normally had run, this race would be over. Mm-hmm. He is giving Johnson the opportunity to win this race. And as I wrote, and as Right Wisconsin posted earlier this week,
mm-hmm. great piece.
Thank you. The only thing Ron Johnson should be talking about between now and the election is you have Obamacare because of Senator mm-hmm. Feingold. If mm-hmm. you are paying less for your health care now, vote for Senator Feingold. If you have more health care options now, vote for Senator Feingold. If you have all the doctors you want and never had to make a change because of this marketplace, vote for Senator Feingold. If you're upset with the change in our healthcare landscape in the last 6 years, do not empower the guy who made this happen. He was the decisive vote.
Okay, now, there are two iron rules in politics, and I want to bounce this off of both of you. Two iron rules in Wisconsin politics. Number one, that Republicans do very, very well in the off-presidential election year elections. Democrats do very well in the presidential election years. That's number one. The other rule seems to be that there's not much ticket splitting anymore, that essentially whatever happens at the top of the ticket is going to happen to the people also on the ticket. So I'm going to ask you this question. Is it remotely possible that Donald Trump could lose Wisconsin but Ron Johnson win? Or is Johnson's fate tied to Donald Trump, Brian Fraley?
It's absolutely possible, and it has to happen for
really?
Senator Johnson to win. I think you're going to see a lot of ticket splitters. When you look at that 19% don't favor either of the candidates right now, and even when you expand it to the Libertarian and Green candidates, there's still, I think, 13% say that they're not voting for any of the four.
Mm-hmm.
Those people, if they vote somewhere else or don't vote for president, if they go out, they will determine who the next U.S. senator is. So that's where organization on the ground and identifying those nonpartisan but definite voters, those independents.
I understand that it's highly unlikely, and it has not happened in a very, very long time. And we certainly saw this with Tammy Baldwin 4 years ago. That there was no way for Tommy Thompson to overcome what the Democrats mm-hmm. were doing with their turnout. But is it possible that you'd have ticket splitting, whether you'd have Hillary Clinton win the state and Ron Johnson?
I think it's distinctively possible. I mean, I think the Johnson campaign, besides pushing Obamacare, national security, has to remind everybody, why did you fire the man 6 years ago? Why would you willingly put him back in? Because all Russ Feingold is doing, he's running essentially the 2010 campaign over.
Mm-hmm.
He's rehashing the same issues he thought he lost on, thinking this will just put me back in the seat again, realizing the world has changed and that the issues that people care about have changed since 2020.
Yeah, Feingold's vote against Homeland Security doesn't look any better in retrospect. Feingold's vote for Obamacare does not make him look any better. And Feingold being a part
horrible.
Of the Obama foreign policy team,
God, yes.
the Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, Obama foreign policy team does not make him a better
candidate. You know, mm-hmm. the Republican Party has to make a very, very significant strategic decision sometime. Because they have very, very, very good data in Wisconsin about turning out the vote, getting out the vote effort. And they'll have to decide, what do you do if you have voters, particularly in northern and western Wisconsin, who might be voters who would vote for Donald Trump but would vote for Russ Feingold? Do they turn out those voters?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm told that there are people who are Trump-Feingold voters. So the Republican Party has to decide, do you turn those voters out or do you ignore those voters? And my sense is that Republicans who have their finger on that trigger are not going, that they're going to prioritize turning out voters who are going to vote for Ron Johnson. But it is a very, very
fascinating.
It is a fascinating dilemma. Let's take a break. It's 11:17. You're listening to News Radio 620 WTMJ. We're in the middle of the Right Wisconsin Week in Review. It is 11:20. We're in the middle of the Right Wisconsin Week in Review. Brian Fraley, Kevin Benversi, I'm Charlie Sykes. So since we're on the top of the ticket to Trump, what an amazing day he had the other day. Goes to Mexico, is sort of meek and deferential, moderate, and then he goes and gives this speech to this raucous rally down in Arizona. So what was your take? I read an account that a lot of the Trump people think he won the election on that day. On balance, plus, negative, minus, what?
I called it a negative. My take on this is the only thing I can. This was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Oh, yeah.
He comes down. He most political professionals looking at him next to the president of Mexico. I can't think of the guy's name, and he's like, oh my god, he's actually being the adult in the room. He can pull this off. Oh my god, it's crazy. Yeah. And then literally 6 hours later, out comes. I don't know if it was Steve Bannon got in his head during the...
About it is there are a couple of... The editors of National Review who have been very, very anti-Trump, very, very critical of Trump, and are still never Trump, have an editorial saying that if you leave out the rhetoric and the shouting and the yelling and everything and all of that baggage, that his immigration plan is actually relatively reasonable.
This gang of nine.
And defensible. However, once again, you have all of that. So explain to me, if in fact he wasn't really going to be changing his immigration policy, what was that 2 weeks about? What was that waffling about? What was that, I'm going to soften, or I'm not going to soften, even made Ann Coulter nervous for a while?
It's the same way if he's president, the way he's going to govern. He doesn't have, remember we've talked about this, he doesn't have a core ideology. He doesn't have a core agenda. He doesn't have a core belief system. His only belief is in his, that he knows for sure, is of his own greatness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I throw some trial balloons out there, and if this gets traction, then this is what I believe in. Look, I'm reminded, second grade, first communion practice, the dry run through from St. Pius grade school. We're all up there. It's the morning before the ceremony, and we're all told how we're supposed to stand.
Right.
And everyone's worried about these two twins in my class. Mm-hmm. Are they going to behave? Because they were hellions, mm-hmm. right? They behaved so nicely during the First Communion ceremony. It was great. Everyone was pleased. Now, Monday when they got back to school, were they okay? No, it was back to what they were. That is exactly false. That is exactly Trump.
Everyone seems to understand this as well. He's going to speak to at a black church, and he's going to be interviewed by a...
He can stick to the script.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's it. They leaked the actual script. All of the questions, all of the answers, it is completely scripted out. And everybody sort of now knows that what Donald Trump's got to do is he's basically got to convince the public that he's somebody different for the next 60 days. If he reads somebody else's words, then maybe we'll think that he is somebody different than he actually
really
is.
Look how they taped the Apprentice, right? They gave him production notes and key points he was supposed to make, and then they would go over in post-production where he would do voiceovers to kind of synthesize stuff. Well, that's exactly how he's going to run for president in the next 60 days.
Okay, Colin Kaepernick boycotting the anthem, wearing pig socks, whatever. How big a problem is this for the NFL, Kevin Benversi?
Well, I think it's a problem the NFL doesn't want to deal with because they're not talking about it. I mean, they're letting him.
How could they deal with it?
Yeah. Well, one, if they can't suspend him, he violated no league rules. I mean, the only way this is the weirdest part about the NFL. The only way they could punish him is if he wears pig socks during a game. Because their everything uniformity is just key, and you're hearing all these, the insane stories of...
But what if his teammates joined him in sitting it out? If this begins to spread, I mean, I agree there's not much the NFL can do about this, but if this starts spreading throughout the NFL, Brian Fraley, that's your PR guy. This is a PR problem.
Yeah, it could be a problem, and that's why I wouldn't give it a lot of attention. The bigger problem for me with the NFL is them not allowing the Dallas Cowboys to have that decal on their helmet honoring the five fallen officers. That's something that the NFL can handle.
That looks a lot worse now.
Yes, it does.
And the one thing that the NFL is, it's going to be a problem for the NFL is if they suddenly start getting phone calls from like the U.S. military, which is a big sponsor for the NFL. Remember, they had those stories about quote unquote, you know, full patriotism. You're going, it's the NFL. You know, why are they paying for it? But they've been doing it for years, and you know, it's one of their biggest sponsors.
Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, the undercovered story of the week. You're listening to News Radio 620 WTMJ. I'm Charlie Sykes. It is 11:27. You're listening to News Radio 620 WTMJ. RightWisconsin.com is sponsored by the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce, a place to grow business. So what was the undercovered story of the week, Kevin Benversi?
I just wrote this for Right Wisconsin. Russ Feingold was out in La Crosse yesterday and apparently is advocating to let's make the Internet a utility, as in like public utility, government regulation, and all the other wonderful things that come along with those sorts of things.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Brian Fraley, undercovered story of the week.
Well, as Johnson coordinator Devin Gatton mentioned on your show the last hour, as of today, the Johnson Libertarian campaign for president has more field offices open in Wisconsin than Trump has in Florida. Now, the speeches get the headlines and the puffy rhetoric gets all the attention, but the work is done on the ground by the field staff, and what the Trump campaign is doing is they're just renting the Republican Party. If the Republican Party shifts attention, he's dead in the water.
See, here's the question, and this, again, since we're getting a little bit wonky here, does that matter? Does it? Because around the country, the disparity is pretty dramatic. I think in Florida it was something like 50-1 or something like that, that Clinton had 50 offices to the one for Donald Trump. The Trump campaign is obviously deciding we don't need that. This is not, you know, we represent a different kind of politics. So does that ground game stuff still matter in American politics?
It absolutely matters, and it is in close races. It's the difference maker.
What do you think, Kevin?
Oh, I think it totally still matters. I mean, the only thing that they've proven was,
especially
that
if it comes to a jump ball,
it can win a 17-man primary if you're the biggest megaphone in the room. The problem is when it's a head-to-head matchup and it's still about dragging people out to make sure you win by X amount of votes in Ohio or Pennsylvania or Florida, where he needs to win and he's got no ground game, it's going to be trouble.
Yeah, I was talking to one official of the party who said that you have to be within a field goal. You have to be within 3 points, and then it can make a difference. If you're within 3 points, those things do make a difference. So the Republican Party infrastructure itself has a pretty good ground game. Trump has absolutely none. He's just hoping that they're going to be able to turn it over. My undercovered story of the week, and this is really very much an undercovered story, are these leaked memos from the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, how to deal with Black Lives Matter, all of this stuff. It's so embarrassing that the Democratic officials are telling Republicans, don't use this because that will just encourage the Russian hackers or whatever. And in these memos, Democrats are specifically warned against using the phrase "all lives matter," and they're told don't ever talk about black on black crime, as that'll anger the Black Lives Matter activists. Now, this is fascinating.
It's also fascinating that it got leaked. Yeah. Well, somebody leaked it, right?
It's fascinating that it got leaked. It's fascinating that they would write it, that they actually are telling fellow Democrats, do not address the problem of black-on-black crime.
And by all accounts, the Democrats are taking that advice.
Exactly. The memo also concludes with a list of talking points Democrats can use when talking to Black Lives Matter. These include such lines as, a history of systematic racism continues to confront the lives of African Americans. So if you hear this coming out of the mouth of a Democrat, you know that, yep, these are actually the official talking points. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Thanks,
I appreciate
Charlie.
It very much.